Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Lauren Silverman, in for Chris Boyd. For veterans who've had the strength to serve in any branch of the military, an injury can be demoralizing. And getting used to life in a wheelchair, a big transition. One place vets can turn to a healthy yearly competition. It's in fact the largest wheelchair sports competition in the world. And this June, it's coming to Dallas. Today, we're talking to some of the participants in this year's games. Bill Fisher is a former Marine who competes in the National Veterans Wheelchair Games. He throws shot put and javelin. He bowls and competes in air rifle. Donna Guerin is a rehab coach. And Dan Higgins is a local coordinator for the games. Bill, Dan, Donna, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, thanks for having us.
So, Dan, for people who've never been, I have never been, describe what the National Wheelchair Games look like. Sort of set the scene for us.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having us here. It's absolutely an honor and a privilege for the city to be hosting this event. The Wheelchair Games, in general, is an outgrowth of the Department of Veterans Affairs' commitment to the rehabilitation of our nation's veterans that have suffered some kind of spinal cord injury or in a wheelchair as a result of that injury or a stroke or amputation. We do that through the promotion of healthy activities like sports and recreation. And people like Donna all over across the nation working for VAs are working with veterans and helping them in their rehabilitation process and bringing them to the games so that they can get involved in adaptive sports.
What do the games look like? I mean, how big of a thing is it? What's the climate? What's the energy?
Oh, the energy's real high. It's a really big operation. We've rented out 900 hotel rooms in the city of Dallas to accommodate the games. There'll be 600 athletes coming in from all over around the nation, from all the different VAs around the country. There'll be 22 contracted buses transporting veterans all over the city all week long to the different sporting venues. It's just a real big deal, and the energy is real high because these are veterans using that same warrior spirit they use in the military. They're going to be bringing that into some competition amongst each other to try to take home some medals.
And how did this tradition start? It's been around for a few decades.
Oh, yes. This is the 35th National Veterans Wheelchair Games. Started back in 1981 in Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. The founder, Tom Brown, who was at that time a recreational therapist for the VA, he's also a wheelchair, I'll make sure I get this right. He's a Wheelchair Sports Hall of Fame member.
Oh, wow.
A real big, long basketball career. And he was asked to start a recreational program back in 1981 in a sports competition for veterans. And it has just grown and grown and gone 74 athletes at the first games. Mm. And now we're looking at almost 600 for Dallas.
So, Bill, how did you find out about the National Veterans Wheelchair Games?
I actually got involved a couple of years ago when I first started in a wheelchair. I haven't been in a wheelchair that long, but I got involved with the PVA here, and I got to meet a lot of veterans.
And the PVA, that's the
Paralyzed Veterans of America. Huh. Yeah, and I got involved with them, and then I started on the Wheelchair Honor Guard, which is the only wheelchair honor guard in the country right here. For the Paralyzed Veterans of America. So getting to know a lot of the people, also as a volunteer at the VA hospital and through the PVA was how I learned about it.
And tell me about you said you haven't been in a wheelchair for very long. Your diagnosis was back, is it 2007? Describe what that is.
No, it's actually, I started back in 2007. I was suffering through it until about 2011 where I ended up being diagnosed with degenerative disc disease. And that eventually put me in the wheelchair for getting around. So,
but you had been a sportsman before that. You'd played sports before?
Not a whole lot. No? I'd done softball. I played a lot of softball and putt-putt golf.
Oh, not too hard, I guess.
No.
Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I'm not very good at it.
No.
So, but you, what inspired you to get going into a national competition then if you hadn't been competitive in sports before?
Well, you know, talking to a lot of the athletes, and just to a lot of them said, you know, even if it's your only goal is to meet other people, and sometimes it's not all about the scores or about the medals. Sometimes it's about the sense of accomplishment in what you can do in your personal best. You may not be able to take home a medal, but getting out and doing your personal best and meeting others who are out there competing with you, I think is sometimes more important than anything.
What was it like to get that diagnosis? You'd been in the Marines for how long? You'd been pretty active.
Yeah, I actually am still active with the Marine Corps League, the Tarrant County Marine Corps League, which and I'm a member of the Marine Corps League National. It was kind of devastating, and I still go through periods where I feel like, you know, I see somebody running and jumping and doing the things that I wish I could do. And so it's just, I have moments.
Yeah, I can imagine. And is that how it is when you've gone to the events before in other cities across the country? What the feeling you get from other veterans, is it, are a lot of them going through those moments of ups and downs?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at the games.
No, yeah.
Well, you know, and everybody has their own moments, and you find that out just by meeting them. But at the games, it's everybody is happy, and we're just glad to be able to do what we can do.
So which sports are you going to compete in this year?
This year I'm going to take on softball, which I haven't done in a wheelchair before. And then I'm going to go back for bowling, air rifle, shot put, javelin, and discus.
So how do you make some of those events, which a lot of people are used to seeing, you know, played without wheelchairs, wheelchair friendly? What do you have to change for softball, for example? What's different than your standard softball game?
Well, it's really not a whole lot different, you know. You can other than what you're sitting in, and you still, you know, get around the bases and do everything. It's just you have to learn to adapt rather than being able to stand and slide into base.
Slides are a lot harder.
They're a lot harder, and when you slide, you're going to slide. So,
and they really do slide too, because I've watched
really?
Them play. And when they're going for a ball, where they're trying to get to a base, sometimes they get to the point where they actually come out of their wheelchair because they're so intense in their competition.
Mm, you get a lot of guys you have to go pick up.
They crash and burn sometimes.
Oh, really?
They'll knock each other out when they get up to the bat. Though they have to use one hand when they bat because they've got to be ready if they hit the ball to move to first base.
Oh, that makes sense. I didn't think about that.
And we use a larger ball.
And they really have to be ready to push off to get there, though.
Mm-hmm. And they can't they have to use they can't touch the ground. So they have to make sure they're up on their foot stand.
So what other adjustments, or are these wheelchairs standard wheelchairs? Bill, do you use a power wheelchair, a manual wheelchair? And
no, there are sports that they use a power chair, and I've seen some amazing people using their power chairs, which you would never. It's amazing what people do. But we have chairs that are specifically made for sports.
Yeah. And how are those different? I'm curious.
Well, a lot of times the wheels are set differently. Like, you know, when you play in a lot of those games like that, and rather than the wheels going straight up and down, the wheels are kind of curved inward.
Yeah, I've seen that. They're slanted in.
Right.
Usually for the basketball chairs, get that.
Like, and things like that.
And they're thicker.
And why is that? Why are the wheels sometimes slanted like that in basketball?
It makes the chair go faster. Yeah, it's a little harder to control, but it goes a lot faster.
Interesting.
So, I think one of the biggest adaptations to a wheelchair that you'll see that's probably the most obvious is the sport of quad rugby. It's a rugby tournament designed specifically for those suffering from quadriplegia.
Yeah.
And it's a very rough sport. They are out there to try to injure and maim each other sometimes because they're that adamant about winning. And that particular wheelchair is just guarded with a heavy sheeting of steel all the way around it.
Really?
And the chairs themselves look like something out of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome or something like that. So it's a pretty cool sport, and it's one of our premier watch sports because people really like it.
Which I was going to ask about. So which sports fill up first in terms of sign-ups, and which are most competitive?
Oh, I think the air rifles is one of the ones. They have 90 competitors. Archery is another one that they have limited. So it's 90 competitors and trap shoot.
Huh. Now, air rifle's a new one. Is that this year or no?
Pistols.
Oh, pistols. How's the competition work for that?
Well, last year was its first year, so they were still trying to get a feel for it. We we just started practicing. Some of the guys had their own pistols, air pistols, so we really weren't for sure of the rules and everything, so we just sort of made our own. And we would practice.
Out in Tarrant? And where were you guys practicing?
We used the Joint Reserve Base, the old Carswell. They have a rifle range out there.
So the veterans at these games, I'm sure that they've been injured in many different ways, lots of different reasons that they're in wheelchairs, some on duty and some not on duty. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, we have a wide array of reasons why they're using wheelchairs.
Mm-hmm. Bill, is there anyone you've met in the past years that you've gone whose stories particularly inspired you?
Yeah, actually, I met a Marine last year in Philadelphia, and he was in a wheelchair, and him and his wife were there. He had got injured in a roadside bomb, and he was missing both legs. He was missing his left arm, and his right arm, they thought they were going to take his fingers, but they didn't. They were just bone is all there was to it. And so, you know how they, when you're burned over such a large part of your body, the skin is, you know. And I met him, and he had the most courageous story I've ever heard. I mean, he just puts you to tears listening to him and what he was accomplishing just by being there, for one thing, and then competing in the sports that he was doing in a power chair. It's just amazing.
Now, how do you make the decision to – I can imagine making the decision to go and to this event and be surrounded by other veterans can be overwhelming in some ways. It's, I don't know, maybe brings back a lot of memories or things that you wish you could do.
Not so much, because everybody is in a wheelchair. Hmm. And, you know, it'd be something if you're sitting in the stands watching a regular softball game or a regular football game. But when you're at the games, it's not like that at all. You're just glad to be around people and to share their stories with them.
Donna, what's it like when you approach people, veterans who have injuries, and ask them whether they're interested in the games? What kinds of reactions do you get?
Most of them never heard of it before. I've been known to run out the door. I caught one of the athletes. He was leaving our clinic and in a chair, and I went running after him and asked him if he had interested in the wheelchair games. He'd never heard of them. And I think he was one of those vets that he had gotten the news that he was probably going to be in the chair for the rest of his life and down. And I got him, and we started practicing. He did air rifles, I think air rifles and bowling and archery. And he may have done softball that year. I'm not for sure.
But you convinced him to do it.
But he came back that year. He had won 5 gold medals out of it. And, I mean, you know, there's a lot of laughter and there's a lot of crying.
We're talking today with Bill Fisher. He's a wheelchair games competitor. And Coach Donna Guerin. She's with us also from Fort Worth, and local Veterans Affairs Coordinator Dan Higgins. You can join our conversation by calling 800-933-5372, and you can email us at think@kera.org. You can also send me a tweet. I'm at L Silverwoman. Now, I wanted to ask you, Bill, whether the games really feel like a second home.
Absolutely. Just meeting the people from all over the world, sometimes all over the country, it's absolutely, you don't want it to quit. You want it to go on. So.
We'll be back with more from Bill, Dan, and Donna after a short break. This is KERA News.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Summer Youth, with hands-on workshops in robotics, Minecraft, game design, and visual arts for students entering K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is now open at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Lauren Silverman, in today for Chris Boyd. Our guests are Bill Fisher, a wheelchair games competitor, coach Donna Guerin, and local Veterans Affairs Coordinator Dan Higgins. Dan, why have Dallas host the 35th National Wheelchair Games?
Well, it just makes sense. I mean, Dallas has a long history of just being very welcoming and concerned with veterans. When our selection committee came through town, the national site visit came. One of the criteria that they look for is that you have the community support that you're going to need to get it done, because it takes a lot to get games like this off the ground in the community. You got to make sure you have that support. We were able to, with a lot of help from the Dallas Sports Commission, some amazing help from the Dallas Sports Commission, we were able to identify and bring on some more community partners, such as Southern Methodist University, a lot of the venues like the McKinnish Park, Kay Bailey Hutchinson Convention Center. Just knowing that infrastructure was there. And then we have an amazing VA Medical Center with lots of employees that are forming a local organizing committee. In order to pull this off, we have 54 committees of 100-plus VA employees who have volunteered to help put this event together above and beyond, with no extra pay, above and beyond what they already do every day for veterans. And so when the committee came through town, they had to make sure all that stuff was in place. Our medical center director had to agree to it. Then when we went out and recruited local organizing committee members, so many amazing employees just raised their hand and said, absolutely, we want this event. So it was just a real easy choice.
Now, this is sort of a culmination for many veterans getting to this place where they can come and compete. What goes into making it to the games? What happens in this rehab process before that?
Well, one thing that's important to remember is that every athlete that attends the wheelchair game, the National Veterans Wheelchair Games, is a rehabilitation success story all by itself just by getting there. Can you imagine being told that you're going to be living using a wheelchair for the rest of your life, and all the emotional issues that might come with that, the physical rehabilitation that has to come along with that? For a lot of our veterans, just learning how to get from their chair into their bed or dress in the morning or getting in and out of a car is a major process, just learning that. And then they come across wonderful people like Donna Guerin that inspire them to know that life isn't over and life can still mean something and it can still be a lot of fun. You have all kinds of health care providers and some amazing people that work at VAs all over the country that spend a lot of time working with the veteran and helping him in his rehabilitation process. And so coming to the wheelchair games is going, getting past that how do I live daily life to how do I live life to the fullest now. And so we have lots of therapists all over the country that are helping our veterans doing that. If a veteran's at the games, that already tells you that he has not lost the same warrior spirit that he used to serve our country. He still has that, and now he's applying it to his own well-being and taking life into his or her own hands.
So, Donna, when you're coaching people, what is your role? And I'm sure you're learning from them as well.
Oh, yeah. I had done archery in my younger years, and of course I bowled, just the simple going to the bowling alley, and they may have been a 300 bowler back then. Well, maybe not 300, but 250. But just sitting in a chair and learning, because you have the rims, the tires there, you have to just do a whole new process of learning how to throw that ball. It sounds simple, but when you get in the chair and you have to lean over and work your magic around those little arrows, just
So how can you teach them? You aren't in a wheelchair, have you?
No.
Have you tried bowling from a wheelchair to see sort of what that might be like?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's not easy.
No, it's not easy. Even the archery, just because you're sitting, so now you have this bow, and they shoot compound and recurve bows also. So just learning how to maneuver, you have to set yourself to the side and work your hands around your chair and your wheels.
Which sports were hardest for you to do, Bill?
Well, my first year, it definitely was bowling, for one thing. I was just recovering from rotator cuff surgery, and I'm right-handed, and so I couldn't bowl right-handed. So I had to learn how to bowl left-handed for my first year. And I that ball went straight down that thing every time. It was all in either one side or the other, just couldn't make it down the middle, but it was all straight arrow going down. So, yep.
Needed bumpers.
Yeah, yep. But
And did you stick with bowling? Are you still
absolutely
doing that one?
I'm doing it again this year. This will be my third year.
So have you learned some tricks to make it easier?
I have. I've learned I'm a slow learner, so it took me a while. But I've learned how, you know, not to put such a big spin on the ball, which I tend to do when I'm in a chair. Mm. And learn, you know, you just have to position your chair up one side or the other, and instead of, you know, running up to it, you can't do that anymore. So you have to kind of position your chair where you think you're going to want the ball to go. So
now, what misconceptions do you face as an athlete at the games, being in a wheelchair? Not at the games misconceptions, but in general, when you talk about being an athlete in a wheelchair.
I'm not.
Are people surprised to hear that you compete?
So yeah, a lot of them are. A lot of them don't. You know, if you're not in a wheelchair, you don't know people in the wheelchair. You don't think about it. You know, there's a whole world of obstacles that you don't think about when you're walking. I mean, it's something as simple as a carpet, which you might feel, oh, that feels good under your feet. Well, not when you're in a manual chair. It doesn't feel too good. But yeah, so you have to kind of educate people and say, no, you can do just as much as before, just different.
And do you do that in general? I mean, you volunteer it for different organizations, right?
I do. I've been almost 4 years volunteering at the VA hospital now, and I volunteer in spinal cord injury unit. And so I get to meet a lot of people. I actually learn more from them than I think I give.
Now, do some of the events that you use the power wheelchair in, is there rules? How do you keep it fair for all people who are competing? Are there rules saying you can use a power wheelchair in this one or a manual in this one? Or
Different categories.
Yeah, so talk about what are the categories.
You have categories for quadriplegics. Just in the bowling, some of them, they have ramp bowling, which the volunteers place the ball up on the ramp, and then you adjust the ramp for them, and then they push it off. You have a handleball, and it's a bowling ball with a handle in it that some of the quads, and I don't know if the paras, I can't remember, when they throw it, that handle pops back down into the ball.
Oh.
And stuff. So they have different adaptive equipment.
And just like most competitive sports and the athletes and the competition that goes between them, we have our certain amount of sandbaggers too, and that's why we have medical providers that have to classify their disabilities. Because we actually have athletes that will actually try to act as if they're a little bit more disabled than they really are so that they can get in an easier to win category. So just like any sports competition, we have to monitor all that stuff.
Some of them are reclassified every year, different categories.
And how many different categories are there? There are a lot?
It all depends on the sport. Some of the sports have up to four or five categories, and some just have
six. Six is the highest that there is, mostly for amputees. You have three levels as a quadriplegic. Yeah. So just levels. Different injury levels.
I see.
So when you get a quadriplegic rugby team together, when someone's suffering from quadriplegia, that just means that you have limitations in all four quadrants. And those can be all the way to the very highly able to be able to handle a ball, all the way to quadriplegia. Some people have to use a sip and puff to get in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And obviously that person's not going to be playing quad rugby. So it makes sense in a competitive atmosphere that if you were a coach, you'd try to have the most able-bodied people on your team to try to win. So to counter that, you're assigned a number from 1 to 5, like say with 5 being the most disabled, or it might be vice versa. I forget now. Mm-hmm. And each team is only allowed to have so many points on it.
Oh, I see.
And so there has to be a mixture of high-functioning and lower-functioning people so that one team's not dominant over another.
Mm-hmm. And what's at stake to win? What do the medals signify? Is there anything else behind
bragging
it?
Rights. You know, that military ribbing and competition between services, that doesn't disappear when you leave the military.
And is there much competition between the branches? Do you see a sort of
oh, yeah.
Yes. We even have a team out of Great Britain. that comes over. And they've been participating probably about 9 or 10 years.
And Bill, you're laughing too. You're a former Marine, so what?
And everybody loves to beat a Marine.
Yeah,
they
I'd
do.
Imagine.
Well, they know when's the best.
Here we go. Here we go. To come in.
Hoorah.
No, there really is. I was laughing because I was recalling a story of one of our guys that he was in the Navy and he's an amputee. He's got a missing a leg. And I was in the chair behind him, and I saw his Navy sticker on the back of his chair. And not even thinking, I said, take that off your chair. That's embarrassing.
And what did he say to you?
I beat foot the wrong way.
So, can't say that on the radio.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. Now, but it's a friendly rivalry.
Absolutely. We let people know that, you know, when it comes down to the bottom line, you know, we're all signed on the dotted line and to defend our country. And we always say that we can rib each other, but let an outsider try it, and they're going to have to answer to all of us. So,
now someone wrote an email and asked whether you need to be a veteran to participate in the games.
Yes,
you do, but there are volunteer opportunities for non-veterans. Is that right?
Oh yes, this is a highly volunteer type event that goes on. That week of the games, we will try to recruit and utilize anywhere from 2,400 to 3,000 community volunteers.
So there's plenty of opportunities.
Yes, and if anybody wants to volunteer, which we hope we get a great response, they can go onto our website, wheelchairgames.org, and there's a link on there for volunteer opportunities, and it's pretty clear on how to fill that out. And we want as many people as we can in the community to come out and
help. We definitely need them. Just think of just in the archery event alone, and that's just a morning event, if you have 90 competitors, they're shooting the targets, and they do 6 ends at 30 and 6 ends at 50. Some of them may lose the arrows in the grass.
Wow. Uh-huh.
So we need volunteers out there, one to
wanting to dig through the grass.
To the grass. We have to, of course, it's usually hot out there, so we have to keep the water in cool towels. And when you've spread across that field, you know, it takes a lot of volunteers.
Yeah. And not to mention, this event is a major logistical challenge when you think about it. Every airport is equipped to accommodate people with disabilities, and they do a great job of it most of the time. But not every airport is used to 600 wheelchair users coming into their terminals all in one day that all have to be brought in and then leave the airport. And to try to do this without disrupting normal airport operations. Our 22 contracted buses, they will be hopefully low-floor buses. But in order to accommodate as many athletes as we can, we actually have to take all the seats out of the bus and retrofit it with strapping systems to be able to hold everybody in it. And on every bus, there's 2 to 3 volunteers helping us with that operation, and there's 22 of those buses going on at all times.
Oh, man.
And we also have the other airport. So we're one of the few cities that has 2 airports that veterans will be coming into.
And right now we're instructing all our veterans and their coaches to book flights into DFW Airport, but we're also prepared with contingency plans in case the other airport comes into play.
Now, the physical benefits of competing and getting in shape to compete are pretty obvious. What are the mental benefits, the emotional benefits of competing in something like this? Bill?
I think a lot of it has to do with just, like I said, being able to compete with other disabled veterans, and to know that you can do something, that you're, like you said, you're not limited. You're only limited by what you think you are. And to be able to compete with other veterans and just feeling good about, sometimes it's not even the medal. Sometimes it's just knowing that you did your personal best and you met a lot of new friends along the way.
Do you stay in touch with any of the people you've met in the years past?
I do. I met several people. I was writing some letters yesterday to people that I met in Philadelphia, and I actually met some of the cast of, do I dare say the name of a show?
Oh, go ahead.
Amish Mafia.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, I met some of the Smuckers that were up there. Yeah.
So you stay in touch with them, too.
I do. I just wrote a letter to them 3 days ago, I think.
Yeah, the camaraderie is pretty amazing because the first 2 days of the games, as all the flights come in and all the athletes come into town, you think you've just walked into a family reunion of all the people that haven't seen each other since last year's games.
Mm-hmm. And Donna, do you see that too among and even across the branches?
It's an all veterans event, so every year you can hear them yelling, especially in the airports coming through and loading the buses and the joking, the kidding that goes on. And
what's your favorite sport to watch?
I'm partial to the archery, and I like the quad rugby. And they have it's called a Super G. It's more of an obstacle course, and that's one of the big events that
And what kind of injuries do you see with rugby? Like you're saying, I'm sure in any sports competitions you're going to see injuries, and there are people trained to handle that. But are injuries different for people who are in wheelchairs, the types of accidents or things that you see?
Rugby, you see some smashed fingers. they tip over. I mean, when they're out there on the floor, that metal is there for a reason. And it's
brutal.
It is brutal. What is it? No bars hold type of competition.
There's actually
guys. It's known as murder ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually guys that we know that it's not a question of if they'll tip over, it's when and how many times.
How bad are you
gonna be? Yeah.
So do they wear special padding or anything to try and?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They wear the knee pads and the elbow pads. And, mm-hmm. Yep.
They come prepared.
Mm-hmm. So, even basketball. I mean, it's out there and
Donna and I are both recreation therapists by trade.
Yes.
Donna actually was my intern supervisor when I came into the field, so I try to agree with her as much as I possibly can. And, you know, our mission as therapists are to always to restore somebody to the highest level of participation that they were at before they were injured. So a lot of times, whoever's in quad rugby, you'll find that before they ever got injured, those high-energy extreme sports were the kind of sports they did before they got injured, and that was the most attractive to them. So a lot of times it's really the sport that they're participating in might not have so much to do with their injury as it does is what they were interested in before they ever got hurt, and a therapist has returned them to that.
We're talking today with Bill Fisher, Donna Guerin, and Dan Higgins about the National Veterans Wheelchair Games, which are coming to Dallas in June. Join our conversation by calling 800-933-5372, emailing think@kera.org, or send me a tweet. I'm @LSilverWoman. We'll be back with more after a short break.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Summer Youth with hands-on workshops in robotics, Minecraft, game design, and visual arts for students entering K-12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is now open at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Lauren Silverman, in today for Chris Boyd. Our guests are Bill Fisher, a wheelchair games competitor, Coach Donna Guerin, and local Veterans Affairs Coordinator Dan Higgins. Thank you guys again for coming in. So, Bill, in the Marines, from what I've heard, it's a pretty tough boot camp. How is training for the Marines different from getting ready for the competition?
Well, the drill instructors are a whole lot nicer.
It's because you've got some sitting next to you here.
Yes, absolutely. It's training. It's just a whole different mindset of training. But it's you do your personal best, and that's all you need.
What is your regimen? How often do you train for and stay in shape physically for things like softball and bowling? And
not as much as I need to.
Standard response.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, there's a bowling alley that I like to go to. It's in my neighborhood, and I go there. And then we do have some of the guys from the VA. They come out and they take us to the field for practice, or you know, they'll take us to another bowling alley. And so the VA employees are pretty active with training also.
So the technology for prosthetics has come a long way in the past few years, and I'm curious about how the idea behind 3D printed hands and feet and legs has changed, and if at all, the games, or if you think it might change the games in the future?
Well, it doesn't change the wheelchair games because, as the title suggests, you have to compete in a wheelchair.
Uh-huh.
And we have people that are using some really high technology prosthetics very successfully, but they can only compete in the wheelchair games if they're willing to compete in a wheelchair.
How about for hands or arms, perhaps?
Yeah, there is some of that already uh-huh. going on.
And that's all. Does that change the rules of the competition in any way, or it's still classified depending on what your ability is?
I would have to refer that to Donna.
Still classified, yeah.
But have you seen – is that something people are excited about, or is that sort of a – that?
We really haven't seen – I don't think I've ever seen that.
Not yet.
Not yet. But I'm sure it's probably coming. There's a lot of advanced technology coming.
And about 20 to 25% of our athletes every year are going to be new injuries, mm-hmm. people on the tail end of that rehab process that I described earlier that are just now coming into the games. With the current conflicts that we're all just starting to wind down now, we're starting to see a much younger generation of veteran. And so I think we're going to see a lot more of that in the future.
Mm-hmm. And do these younger veterans who are coming back from Iraq and from different operations, are they interested in different sports than the older veterans? Are you seeing any trends in what's popular?
You see more competitive nature in the younger ones. Yeah. And the wheelchair game is just one of the national events. We have the Winter Sports Clinic, and they're challenged up there. We have the Golden Age Games. We have the Summer Sports Clinic. So,
And you have to keep in mind, too, that it's not limited to just manual chairs. There are sports for power chairs.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite power chair sports to watch?
I like the slalom.
Oh,
wow. Power chair slalom.
Describe what's that look like.
They actually use their power chairs, and they put obstacles around, and you're timed, and you have to get around these obstacles without knocking them over or driving over them. And
have you tried that one?
No, I haven't. I've got a different classification, so I have to use a manual chair.
Got it.
Yeah. Power soccer is always fun to watch, too.
Yeah. Has that become any more popular? I know generally soccer has become a little bit more popular over the years.
Yeah. Usually the people that I've seen that have participated in power soccer, their injury keeps them from participating in the more aggressive sports. Mm-hmm. So power soccer is a great option for them. It's also, like I said, it's a rehabilitation program to help advance their abilities. So just participating in stuff like power slalom and power soccer also gives them some really good skills to use that power chair, because those things can be quite difficult.
They also have to have a power chair check to make sure that their speed...
It's not turbocharged.
How fast does a standard power chair go?
I think you can make them go as fast as five or six miles an hour.
What's the limit in the games?
Mine actually goes about 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have to keep them under a certain.
They'll pull out and they'll say, "All right, power chair check," and they'll time them going down. So some of them have been known to tweak them a little bit.
And I'm grateful too, because those things are heavy and they'll get your toes. Yeah.
And I have seen veterans get a speeding ticket at the VA hospital for speeding.
Oh, wow. I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that there's, hundreds, we said maybe about 600 or so athletes who are going to come and compete. Bill, why do some veterans, maybe who you've spoken with at the VA hospital, choose not to compete?
The biggest thing is they feel like they wouldn't stand a chance, and that they'd be competing and disappointed because they don't feel like they would be able to compete, especially some of the younger kids. But there are, like she was talking about, different classifications. I'm going to be this year in the Masters, which is for, I hate to say it, everybody above 50, but because for me it was really tough to compete against these 20 and 30-year-olds.
Yeah.
And but there is, they kind of take care of you if you know what you're doing. But there's still something for older people too.
And I think Bill really nailed it when he said they don't think they can. And sometimes it's not even about the ability. For a lot of our veterans, like I said, just coming on the tail end of a rehab process, they've never left home before. They've never had to book their own flights before. They've never transferred off and on an airplane before. They don't know if there's going to be a hotel room available that could meet their needs. And so what we do is we educate them and let them know that everything is possible, even when you're in a wheelchair. And one of the big slogans I hear at the wheelchair games from the athletes themselves is check your disability at the door. We don't bring that with us.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we focus on our abilities rather than our inabilities. And the wheelchair games, it serves as an amazing instrument to be able to let veterans know that they can still do almost anything they want to do, and the resources are available for them to do it.
So what does the week look like in June? What's planned?
It is one busy, busy week. There's 19 different sporting events all over the city. We've got to get the veterans to and from those events. Logistically, everything is, that we say, we live and die by the schedule, because for every veteran that's competing in something in the morning, we also have to get him to a competition in the afternoon, so the timing is imperative. Mm-hmm. So it's a real busy week on an athlete on a competition level. But then just like any world-class sporting event, we have all our bells and whistles, too. There's a major opening ceremonies that if you're going to come to the games, you do not want to miss this. We have our guest speakers. We have an arena. Much like the Olympics, all the veterans come in a procession by state, and their teams all come in. They're all holding their state signs, and that's amazing, and they're all excited. It's a great deal. We have a block party during the week that this year in Dallas is actually scheduled for AT&T Plaza at American Airlines Center. A lot of people call it Victory Park.
Yeah.
That's going to be a really neat venue that has to see that many people celebrating the sacrifice of our veterans all in that great venue there. And then there's a closing celebration and a closing ceremonies. And it's just a week full of emotion and excitement.
Go ahead.
It's a very long day. I'm usually up at 5 in the morning because we need to have the veterans, if they're off station doing an event somewhere else, we have to get them down to breakfast, have them eat, and then I'm the pack mule. I carry a lot of the equipment. Get them to the bus, get them on the bus by 7, get them to the event by 8 o'clock in the morning. The last event doesn't close down, usually 10 o'clock, which is basketball. So time we get them back to the hotel, time to go to bed, you get right back up the next morning. So it's a very busy
and
day.
During the day, what are you doing to help make sure that everything's moving smoothly?
Well, we split out the number of veterans that we have going, and we each sort of have a certain group and deciding who's going to be at the rifle range, who's going to be at the archery, who's going to be at the trap shoot. So they're responsible for that group and just making sure they get to where they're going, make sure that they have their equipment with them, their bowling balls, their archery, setting it up for them when they get there.
I've seen Donna during the weeks of the games before, and she doesn't get much sleep at all, mm-hmm. making sure everybody's where they need to be. And then the staff that runs the games that week, they work 14, 16-hour days,
long days,
5 days in a row.
Yeah.
So now I'm also curious whether you, Bill, you talked about another organization that you work with, the PVA, the Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to mention. The Paralyzed Veterans of America, the Lone Star chapter, is really instrumental in a lot of these guys going to, because they're co-sponsoring the wheelchair games, and so they play a large part in the veterans that are coming and getting them scheduled, like Donna was saying, to the airports and you know, things like that. I mentioned at the top of the hour that we have the nation's only wheelchair honor guard, which we're always looking for people that would be into that. But we're always willing to welcome somebody in and to take care of them and let them know that we do have something for them.
And do you ever have a hard time convincing people to get involved also with the PVA? And
no, not so much. Not so much. Once you explain what it's about and what they're there for, people are pretty open to it.
Yeah, and I'm really glad Bill brought that up, too, because the National Veterans Wheelchair Games on an annual basis is a co-presentation between the Department of Veterans Affairs and Paralyzed Veterans of America. Mm-hmm. I don't think either side could do it without the other. I mean, we all bring something to the table that makes this happen. They're just instrumental in what we do. Glenn Bentley, the executive director for the Lone Star chapter of Paralyzed Veterans of America, is my counterpart here locally, and he and I have been doing some really fast-paced, really good work here, getting things off the ground.
Now, I know that Dallas hasn't hosted the games in a while, but when it did host it, I think that there's been a pretty good turnout, that Dallas at least has the potential to attract a lot of people because of the community of veterans and the community support that's here. What else is going on in the area for veterans that is, you know, in parallels the work going on for the wheelchair games?
Well, obviously, you know, we have a major medical center here in Dallas. So that medical center, if you're a veteran, there's just a wide array of resources there available to you. So you can always reach out in that area. We also have a lot of community-based sports programs that are just maybe not specifically based targeting veterans, but the disabled community as a whole.
And we have Rise Adventure. We have Healing Waters. We have Heroes on the Water, which is a kayak fishing group.
The whole idea of the wheelchair games is not for an athlete just for once a year come to the wheelchair games. This is a rehabilitation program designed to inspire them to continue participation after they go back to their hometowns. And so there's a lot of local sports-based, adaptive sports-based programs that we want them to start getting involved in.
And is there, in addition to the physical part of the rehabilitation for the wheelchair games, is there much emotional and mental work that goes into that? Do coaches help with that?
Absolutely. You know, and like I said, you know, when a veteran has a disability that requires them to use a wheelchair from the time of injury, you've got mental health care providers at your local VAs. You've got kinesiotherapists and physical therapists and surgeons and nurses and so many people that have been involved in that person's rehabilitation that I'm not in a chair, so I can't really speak to it. I think Bill would probably speak to it better than I would, but there's a lot of work that goes into a person's rehabilitation before they're at the level of participating in competitive sports.
Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are so many people connected with the VA and the PVA that are willing to step up and guide you through a lot of the, you know, like you said, the new injuries. You know, it's devastating for some of these people, and so they have to have a good backup of people that they can talk to. And the VA, I think, here does a wonderful job of doing that.
Now, give me a pitch. Why should someone who's never heard of the game, Stan, come or volunteer and sign up? What is it that they'll see and get out of it?
Well, you know, the main reason why I would pitch this is because we're about restoring quality of life to our veterans. I think most people could admit the reason why we enjoy the quality of life that we enjoy is because of the sacrifice that they made to us. So I think we all in some way owe a return to a veteran to restore the quality of their life.
You know, when you watch a quadriplegic get in a chair and be lowered down into the water, and then he swims several laps in a pool, and not having the use of the hands, so you use that shoulder rotation, and if you want to stop, you have to turn over, breathe, turn back over, and continue on. I mean, there's just all these different challenges, and for the particular vet I'm thinking of, just to get into the water, that's a big deal when you can't swim. I mean, you don't have the use of your legs over your trunk or your arms.
So it's inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And how about you, Bill? What's your pitch?
It's very inspiring, and I would encourage anybody that even thinks that they would like to just come on out. They got a whole support system already waiting for them.
Our guests today were Bill Fisher, Donna Guerin, and Dan Higgins. Thanks again for coming in.
Hey, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Enjoyed it.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. And you can contact us via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Lauren Silverman. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.